The busyness of life, sometimes you lose a part of your life. It doesn't die, but it just gets subdued and hidden away. And I think getting in touch with a wild animal, especially one that was in need, because then that draws something out of you when you're giving, you're nurturing, and all the rest of it. I think it just brought to life a part of me that had been very much alive when I was a child. I often say to folk that the film's about love and compassion. And the more of that you give away, the more you get back.
Welcome to Bitch Talk. I'm your host, Erin, here with my co-host, Ange, aka Captain Party. And over the last 10 years, we've been elevating marginalized voices through interviews and events.
Sometimes over a glass of whiskey. If you're thirsty for more bitches, head over to bitchtalkpodcast.com and follow us on Instagram.
A big thank you to 48 Hills and our listeners for voting us Best of the Bay Best Podcast in 2022 and 2023.
And now, on with the show. Welcome to our South by Southwest 2024 Film Festival coverage. Today is a special episode because we're covering one documentary with two separate interviews. The film is called Billy and Molly, An Otter Love Story, and we'll be speaking with the filmmakers and the subjects. For both of these interviews, we're joined by our part-time festival bitch, John Wildman. Enjoy.
We are on Bitch Talk here at South by Southwest 2024. My name is John Wildman. I'm the editor-in-chief of filmsgonewild.com, sitting in here with the Bitch Talk women, Angela Deborah and Erin Lim. And on this segment, we're going to talk about one of the films, which is one of my favorites. I'm sure they knew it was going to happen when Angela and Erin brought the film in. Billy and Molly, An Otter Love Story. And I'm going to have our filmmakers introduce themselves so you recognize their voices.
Hello, I'm Jeff Wilson. I am the producer of the film.
And I'm Charlie Hamilton James. I'm the director.
Okay, now we've got that out of the way. We have our filmmakers introduce our audience to the film. They have not seen it as yet. So tell us about the film.
It's a love story. It's not just, it's a kind of love story of friendship and connection. It's told by Billy's wife about this relationship between a man and a completely wild otter.
Yeah, it's just this extraordinary magic experience that happened to wash up on a jetty in Shetland, and we were just lucky there to capture it, and it turned out to be one of the most incredible stories that either of us have ever been involved in our 30-odd years of filming in the wilds.
Yes, getting like chills just thinking about my experience watching the movie because it was so, so special. You're basically in a trance from the opening shot. I'm in it. So I just want to talk about how you even got these shots. And is it really Molly that you're following? Like, did you know when it was Molly from, 50 feet up? Like, how did you track her in such a beautiful way?
Well, I mean, most otters in Shetland are very shy, but Molly's not. So it's not difficult. But there's Molly. So when you see Molly, it's Molly. And, it's actually some of the times it's difficult filming her because she's just coming. Sniff the lens. those a lot of those drone shots and those wide establishing shots we got because we're working with an animal that, even though she's completely wild, she is tame in the sense that you can get close to her, which allowed us to get, it allowed us to sort of create a sort of cinematic view because the animal is not trying to sort of run and hide from you the moment it sees you.
It's exactly why we knew Molly was a star right from the out.
Yes.
Is that, she has the character that allows her to be comfortable in our presence, even though she's completely wild. And so that just makes her unique in every facet of the word.
So I want to ask the obvious question. How did this story land in your lap? Was the story starting before you got involved? Or were you already tracking Molly, to Ange's point? How did that happen?
So I actually used to live in Shetland. I moved there to film otters when I was 19. Oh. And my next door neighbors were Billy's parents, but I didn't know Billy. But 30 years later, my mate calls me up because he's down at Billy's house helping Billy and Susan's house, helping build it, and he calls me up and says, you've got to come see this otter. So I flew up to Shetland to see the otter, and I'm like, oh, okay, we got to film this. And luckily, Billy had this amazing archive of phone material from the very first meeting. Mm-hmm. So we kind of jumped on board and carried on.
Okay, I love Molly, but let's talk about Jade. And the fact that you, it takes the entire damn movie for Jade to have someone play with her with a freaking ball. Because, I mean, Jade is the unsung hero of this film, and she's so patient, and she's such a sweetie, and yet we have to wait an hour and a half before someone, you know, gives her a ball or even boots a ball for her to chase. So what the hell, guys?
She is undoubtedly a huge star and has got this amazing ability to sort of break the fourth wall and look down the lens, you know, at a moment of utter cuteness. And I think we decided quite early on, didn't we, that she was definitely going to be a metaphor for a lack of attention, you know, and the love that Billy and Susan are pouring into Molly, and the fact that she used to be the favourite child and she isn't anymore. And so I think that shot at the end was something that we talked, it was almost the first shot that we designed, wasn't it? You know, just the idea that we're going to hold it and hold it and hold it, because anybody who's a dog owner is going to recognise that that dog wants attention, you know, anybody. And, you know, 50% of our audience will probably be dog owners. And so to hold it back to the end was just, is probably the only bit of real design we did for the whole film, right?
Yeah, and I think the thing about Jade is that she is, I had never known a dog so focused. She, like, you know, if you go away and then you come back and you haven't seen the dog for a few weeks, it's all like, good to see you. It's a wagging, going crazy. With Jade, she doesn't register that you're another human being. She just, the only thing she registers is that there's someone there to throw a ball for her. So she sees you and she just goes and gets her ball. That's all she does. It's just like complete myopia. But also, every time we'd want, like, we'd be filming a shot, and then Jade would just walk in at the perfect moment, and stand in the perfect place, and it was, I'm like, she was just a dream to work with.
Your eye does kind of dart for her, like, where's Jade? Is Jade around? But I wanted to talk about Susan narrating. Was it always your decision to have that happen, because it adds so much heart to the story?
I think we both set out to make a film about love, and about halfway through we realised that we were really converting on the idea of love of nature and the very sort of palpable love between Billy and Molly. But there was always this presence in the background, it was Susan, and she was so happy to let all of this happen in her life that we realised it wasn't a plan to begin with, but Charlie loves, you know, having female narrators as part of his films. And I think, you know, we just suddenly, it dawned on us, didn't it, that suddenly the person who was showing the most love was right there in front of us, and she absolutely had to be part of the film from that moment onwards. But it wasn't easy. I'll let Charlie speak.
No, and I think one of the things we didn't realise is how much emotional value Susan would come with, because as a viewer, you see yourself in their relationship. Because we all have relationships, and they're usually all flawed with the same problems or the same good bits. But to be able to see those in your characters is wonderful, and I think Susan just brought that to it and suddenly humanised everyone and normalised it. Because I think one of the things I like about filmmaking is normalising everyone, making them accessible.
Can you, Ange touched upon it in her first question, but can you talk more about the cinematography in the film? It's gorgeous, and I'm jealous that people are going to see this on the big screen.
Good, yeah, we definitely made it as with the big screen in mind. I mean, I'll speak for Charlie because he's too modest to say so, but Charlie is an incredible photographer and cinematographer, and, you know, I think when we set out to make this film, we knew that it had to have an aesthetic that really converted on his vision, but also, you know, that really made sure that people experienced the film as if you were in Shetland. And I don't know if you noticed, but, you know, a lot of the film is shot statically, you know, and it just allows you to embed yourself in the environment and feel like you're part of this story. You know, in our other work, we use long lenses and tracking rigs and all of those kind of things to bring the natural world alive. But it was very intentional right from the outset to not go there, to not let technology take over, and just to allow the beauty of where Billy and Susan live in Shetland to be a part of the film. And, you know, luckily we have one of the world's best photographers to do that.
And I think the other thing is, because you've got an animal that you can get close to, it means you can go, you can shoot things wide and you know, they don't vanish. Because, you know, if you've got a wild animal and you shoot wide, it's a long way away. But when you've got Molly, she's close. And I think what that did is allowed us to shoot. I always kind of would say to Johnny, my assistant, when we talked about how we're shooting it, I'd say this film exists in the wide and we go in and out of the wide. And I think because of that, you get a sense of place and understanding of the sort of storytelling in the environment, the landscape. So we were very lucky from that point of view.
Another thing that I really loved about the film is there's a soothing tone to the entire damn movie. And it kind of runs counter to a lot of stuff that we see. And that's through the voiceover lends to that. Billy's personality lends it to that. The cinematography, it all feeds into this thing where I could see you guys talking to, a know-it-all distributor or producer, and then where's the spark? Where's the action? Whatever. And yet I'm going, well, that person would be an idiot, so don't talk to that person, if they come up. But I'm like watching and going, I loved just spending time with them. And so I could totally see this film being that type of film that will be rewatched because of the comfort level, let alone the wonderful story of Billy and Molly, but just that thing of how we interact with it. How much of that was due to your genius design, or how much of it was just a happy freaking accident?
Well, I'm not sure about genius design, but there was design to it. Charlie and I were both very keen when we set out on this adventure to make sure that we made a film that was almost anti all of the bad things that go on in the world and at the moment, and we just wanted to make a good film. And we talked a lot about the film being a fairy tale and the experience of a fairy tale and how we all experience fairy tales and how they make us feel. And I think that just fed into the way that we shot it and the way that we the length of shots that we used. And also, Erland Cooper's score has a large part to play. Erland Cooper has never written a full feature score before, but we knew right away that his music was going to be perfect for what we were doing. So all of that, there was design, but I'm very grateful that you recognize the fact that we did want people to experience good things, and that's what this film hopefully does, is brings goodness back to the world.
And we were very keen to avoid TV tension. We didn't have executive producers saying put tension in. We didn't want it. And in fact, when I post about it on social media, I say the otter lives, because I don't want, because so many people have been writing saying, oh, is the otter going to die? And that, no, we don't want that. It's all lovely.
Yeah. And we were very well supported by National Geographic in that as well. They let us do that, and that's brave.
Well, yeah, job well done. You brought light to my cold, dark heart. So I did want to come back to you, Charlie, because you moved to Shetland at the age of 19 to film sea otters. And never in your wildest dreams, I'm sure, would you think that you were going to have this opportunity to film a sea otter on such an intimate level. So how has... It's sort of like your whole life there has led to this moment. Can you talk about how it's sort of shifted everything in you, this film?
What it's done is allowed me to just let go. Because I think my whole life since I was 14 has been otters. And that's all. And then I spent my whole career filming otters. And now I'm like, okay, I've done it now. I don't need to film any more otters. It's a great weight.
You're done. How does it get better than Molly, though?
The thing is, I can't better that situation. No. There is no better situation. The fact that I used to just go for a walk sometimes, and there was Molly just trotting along. You'd sit down, and she'd curl up next to you, and I'm like, this can't be beaten. So I'm so lucky and privileged that I had that experience. But it's totally, okay, I'm done now.
I have this image of like an action movie, and Jeff comes up to Charlie and says, we have to do one more otter movie. No, I said no more otters.
Yeah. We're getting out of retirement.
I'm done with otters.
Fly under siege.
We got one more.
Charlie was like Jade with the ball and otters. And he just chased the ball constantly. And now we've kicked the ball into the sea and he can't get it anymore. He's become a different person.
I used to have a pet otter.
Oh, of course you did.
You tell us that at the end of the interview. Right? Oh, we need 10 more minutes.
Holy crap, what a capper. Again, the film is Billy and Molly, an otter love story. We've been talking with Jeff Wilson, the producer of the film, and Charlie Hamilton James, the director. Guys, it's been wonderful talking to you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Hey, Bitch Talkers. Before we continue with our next interview, we want to remind all of our Bay Area listeners that there's an exciting opportunity to be part of history. The first ever POC Food and Wine Festival is happening Thursday, May 2nd through Sunday, May 5th. It's a celebration of the global majority and their allies in food, wine, music, and culture. There are events happening both in San Francisco and Berkeley, so you don't even have to cross the bridge if you don't want to. And because of their commitment to accessibility, sliding scale ticket options are also available until this Friday, April 26. So what are you waiting for? Head to pocfoodandwine.com to buy tickets or click on the link in our show notes. And we look forward to seeing you there.
And we are back on Bitch Talk at South by Southwest 2024. My name is John Wildman. I'm the editor-in-chief of filmsgonewild.com, guest hosting with the Bitch Talk women, Angela Tabora and Aaron Lim. And this is going to be our second segment we will be doing on Billy and Molly, an otter love story, because we freaking love this movie. We just love it. We're going to introduce our subjects and then have them tell you about it before we start talking to them about how much we love them. Introduce yourself.
I'm Susan.
And
I'm Billy.
Okay. One of you, why don't you tell us about the film and introduce our audience to it? Billy, it's going to be you.
Okay, so it's my shot. Yeah, I'm not sure how much you know about the whole story, but Molly turned up one day. I was actually watching out the window, and I spotted an otter fishing. So I thought, right, I'll see how close I can get to this otter when it comes out to the sea. And I managed to get within 2 meters of her, and she sat and ate her food. And then she turned and looked at me, right in the eye, and it was clear she was really hungry. She was starving. She looked at me and said, "I don't even care you're there," and carried on eating her food. And so that was the kind of starting point. And from there on, we started to feed her, give her some fish, because she was clearly starving and on the point of death, basically. I didn't know that at the time, but a couple of experts told me afterwards, yeah, she was going to die of starvation. And that's the beginning of the story. From there on, we fed her. She got better. She got healthier. And then ended up going off and having her own baby and then started feeding it.
I do smile when Billy says we fed her.
Correct.
So where I'm from, I'm a townie. So I don't really do wildlife. I don't really do things like this. So when he started feeding this otter, I can't say I was overly impressed. but she gets to you. She is incredibly cute, and she was very hungry. And we'd actually also heard that her mum and possibly a sibling had been killed on the road, so she was on her own. So after a little while, even this heart of stone melted.
I think, to be fair, Susan was a bit scared. I was brought up with animals, so I knew what animals were about, even wild animals. I'm no expert. And Susan hadn't been. So I was intrigued by, you know, what's going to happen with this otter. And I'll always remember the first day that the dog was outside, Jade, and the otter came up, and Susan wanted to call the dog in. And I said, no, leave her there. And I just told Jade to stay still. And she sat on the ground, and Molly came up, had a good sniff, and then went away. So, yeah, between the two of us, we got there.
I love that Susan's sassiness is coming through like 2 minutes into our interview. Thank you, Susan. No, but, you know, we know that, Billy, you were shooting a lot of, I mean, from the get-go, you were shooting a lot of what was happening at your house. But why was it so important to have a crew there, and why was it so important to share the story to you?
I think for me, when the film crew guys wanted to make a film of it, it just seemed a shame not to share this amazing and beautiful thing that was going on with other people. I mean, they often say that, you know, what's life if you can't share what you have? And so for me, it was a wonderful opportunity to just share the story.
Well, share and capture, wasn't it? Because we weren't capturing it.
Yeah, I mean, we were capturing stuff on iPhone, yeah, and, you know, various stuff, but we were never getting the... It's very hard when you're in the frame to be getting the kind of footage that you could be getting when you're standing back and planning and looking at it. So yeah, a bit of both to capture the memory. I mean, this is a memory that we will take with us for the rest of our life. And yeah, there's not really much more I can say other than to share the joy of what was happening and capture the moment.
So, Susan, we talked to the filmmakers about your narration and their decision to have you narrate. So I'm curious, were you okay with it from the beginning? Because you do share a lot of intimate details about your relationship with your husband and your life. And also, Billy, if you can follow up, I'm wondering how much of the narration you knew about, because you're finding out things that she was thinking as well.
So to start with, I wasn't even going to say anything. And I remember going out to Charlie, who was sitting outside in the van, and it was a really cold day, and I went out and said, "Do you want a coffee?" He's like, "No, I'm fine." And then I went out an hour later, "Can I get you a coffee?" And he said, "No." And then it was lunchtime. So I said, "Right, I'll do you a bacon roll and a cup of coffee." And he's like, "Oh, God, that would be great." So when I took it out, I said, "All I ask is my name goes in the catering credits on the film." And then after that, a couple of times he came through and said, "Could you just read... you just read this line? I think it might sound good coming from you." And I was terrible. I was overpronouncing. I was reading it. And anyway, we worked on that. And he said, "No, this could work if you..." And then he asked me to say a few lines. And there was one line. And I said, "Billy's not going to like that." He's like, "Read it anyway." And I said, "Okay, I will. But he's not going to like that." Out of context, it just felt wrong. But when we then put the whole script, if you like, together, we understood why he was picking up on these kind of things. And you and Charlie had a long, 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 long into the night discussion. So Charlie had got to know him very, very well. So some of the things I thought, worked, really worked. And some of the things we thought would work didn't work. You know, and it is a very personal story. For sure, it's a very personal story. And every time we watch it, I still will get emotional watching this film, and I cannot tell you how many times I have watched it. But there's always still a bit that makes me choke up a little. Not cry as much as I did when I first saw the final thing. But I hope we've told it in a very sympathetic, empathetic way that folk will identify with, which was, I think, part of Charlie's whole thing of why he wanted us to tell the story, because he said, "This is your story, so it's better told by you than being told by somebody else." So, yeah.
And I think, I mean, you mentioned the script there, and how much did we know about it? How invested were we in it? And we quickly recognised that a film about a man feeding an otter every day, it's probably not going to become a film. And so Charlie and Jeff sat down and said, "Well, how do we make this into a story that's actually interesting and true?" And so they put together a script and they shared that with us. And because we did say at the outset, "Look, you know, there are certain things you might not want to say." And they said, "Don't worry, we will speak to you about it." And so it was really a process of they came with the script, asked us to read it out, and there was, like Susan says, there was times I said, "That's just not me. I'm not reading that." And Charlie said, "Read it. Once you see it in context, then it'll maybe make a bit more sense." And that's exactly what happened. There were still one or two bits that we tweaked and fine-tuned. There's quite a lot of deep personal stuff in the film, which some of it we offered... I offered because I recognised where Charlie was trying to take the story, and there were certain elements that he was interested to tease out, to find out more about me and about us and about how we functioned and how we operated, and then how this all panned out into the life of a wild animal.
Okay, I brought this up during the last interview with the filmmakers. I'm going to do it again. I am Team Jade. I love Jade. And I took the filmmakers to task because in the film, here's a spoiler, we wait the entire film before someone freaking plays with the ball with Jade. She is so patient, she is so great, and yet nobody plays with her with the ball. So what I'm going to hope is that the two of you tell me that during the course of filmmaking, that someone actually freaking played with the ball with Jade.
Many times. Many, many times. There is absolutely no way... She makes it so that you have to play with her. She, and some of it's even in shot, you'll all be standing there and she will nudge the ball. She'd make a great bowls player because she nudges the ball with such expertise it lands at your feet. And the most hard-hearted person in the world could not then not kick it.
Sometimes, you know, so just behind your feet, so that if you step back, you fall over it. But I often describe Jade as being like the little squirrel in Ice Age 2, and it just turns up, gets its nut, does something daft, makes you laugh, and it's gone. You go, what was that all about? So Jade, in my mind, is like the squirrel in Ice Age 2, and she does such a good job at it. But there's another lovely little bit in the film where Jade is having a dream, the dream sequence, and she's catching the ball. And that's the ball that she gets right at the very end. So she finally gets her dream as a present at the end of the thing. That's just such a lovely moment.
I mean, Charlie will say she's a godsend, she's a dog sent from heaven, because a lot of the stuff that's in the film, well, you can't script a dog. She just did, you know, in shot at the right time. It was
phenomenal. I hadn't thought about that, and I love the fact that she manifested her ball.
Yeah,
absolutely.
This film is really about joy, and I love that there's the conversation around being an adult and going back to finding that joy when you're a kid. Can you talk about sharing that with the crew and what that feels like seeing on a big screen and what the feedback's been for you?
Yeah, me and Susan were speaking about this one day, and I think the busyness of life, sometimes you lose a part of your life. It doesn't die, but it just gets subdued and hidden away. And I think getting in touch with a wild animal, especially one that was in need, because then that draws something out of you when you're giving, you're nurturing, and all the rest of it. I think it just brought to life a part of me that had been very much alive when I was a child and had just gone dormant for so many years, and I'd never been in the situation where these things happened. So it awoke a part of me that had sort of died, but the joy, I think, of doing that. There's a line in a song by, I think it's Neil Diamond, that, you know, the more love you give, the more you receive, and whenever you give, you receive so much back. I often say to the folk that the film's about love and compassion, and the more of that you give away, the more you get back. And so for me to share that notion with the film crew and let them develop it into a story or part of their story, it was just the reality of what was going on.
I'm curious if either of you in your wildest dreams ever thought you'd be the stars of a documentary, and also what this film has done for your lives and for your relationship.
Well, the answer to the first part of your question is no, absolutely not. And still, actually, are not quite there yet, I don't think. We miss having the film crew around. They were with us for 18 months, pretty much, on and off. And we all lived together. And all of a sudden, they packed up and they went home. But our life continued. But I think we probably saw Molly and her life a bit different, because we'd explored that relationship between us, Billy predominantly, but us helping her, and then that flip to what she was doing for us. Then that did change our perspective, I think, on...
Yeah, I mean, no pun intended, we saw her through a different lens, literally, because we were looking at her life in a different way, and we were seeing bits of her life away from home that I'd never explored before, because that was never my mission. My mission was feed the author and keep it alive and help it. So we saw her in a different world and in a different mindset to what we would have. I think we don't really know the effect this film's going to have on our life. It's been an immense privilege, I think, for us to work with people like Charlie and Bertie Gregory and some of these like top world photographers. That has been an amazing privilege. And they're so humble and so good at what they do. I think for me, that's been the top bit of working on the film, was just seeing these guys and working with them and learning so much off of them.
We are incredibly lucky that we have a wild otter that, you know, passes by and pops in for a bit of fish and swims off again. You know, lots of people we have spoken to have been up on holiday in our area and things have seen. any idea where we might find an otter. you know, because they've never, ever seen one. So, you know, we do consider ourselves incredibly fortunate. There is a lot of wildlife outside ours, but...
We've got kind of normalised to it because we've been exposed so much to the narrative of the film that, that we've become a bit normalised and desensitised to the reality of that and having this wild animal come for food. So while we still recognise the enormity of it, the sensitivity towards it has been numbed a little bit. But that's awoken when you meet somebody who goes, oh my gosh, is this really what's happening to you? And that it reminds us and it kind of refreshes that whole reality of what we're in the middle of. Because it's huge and we had no idea or dreamt that this would ever happen.
Again, this is a joyful film. It'll also maybe elicit some happy tears, as it did through maybe one or two of us here. Again, the film is Billy and Molly, an otter love story. We've had with us the subjects Billy and Susan Mayle. It's been wonderful talking to you both.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on today's show. You can find more information about this episode in our show notes.
If you're missing us, you can visit us at bitchtalkpodcast.com to sign up for our newsletter and buy us a cup of coffee.
Did you know we're also on the radio? You can find us at bff.fm.
And lastly, rate and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. All the cool bitches are doing it.
This podcast is a proud member of the BFF.fm podcast network. Learn more at podcasts.bff.fm.
BFF.fm, best frequencies forever.